Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Peter Paul on December 10th, interesting day in world history. Of course, today the world has been focused on Stockholm and the awarding of probably the most controversial awarding of the Nobel Peace Prize in the entire history of the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony and how people, the committees, reach these decisions. I was just researching, being a legal researcher, one of the things. I was looking up the exact wording of Nobel's will, or I guess this is his will, regarding the criteria for awarding the Peace Prize. And here's what it said. Probate lawyers could probably have fun with this and be an interesting argument just for discussion in probate class in law school. Of course, law school does not teach people the law. It's supposed to teach them how to think like lawyers. And, of course, most of them think about that BMW and cocaine and other things. Anyway, here in lifestyle, here is the wording. The Peace Prize is supposed to be awarded to the person who has done the most and the best work for fraternity among nations in the previous year, the abolition or reduction of standing armies, and for the holding and promotion of peace congresses, all of this in the previous year. And in the 12 days that Mr. Obama was in the White House, I don't know what he was running for president in the previous year, so he wasn't doing any of these things. So this certainly adds to the controversy, cheapens the award, and as some people think, calling it pimping the prize. Nobel, interestingly, died in San Remo, Italy in 1901. There's an interesting connection. A famous U.S. Supreme Court lawsuit connected to San Remo Hotel here in San Francisco, which is named after San Remo. It's an interesting land use argument. We'll get into that because I was investigating that, doing some research on that for part of the real estate racketeering scandal that's been ongoing here in San Francisco and California. Excuse me. And also some other criteria shall have conferred the greatest benefit on mankind in the previous year. Yeah, I said that. Now, this is interesting. It's very appropriate. This day in history, 1690, the Massachusetts Bay Colony was the first colonial or American government to borrow money. And, of course, they haven't stopped since. In 1898, this is of significance to Filipinos, Puerto Ricans, and Guamanians. The Spanish-American War, that splendid little war, an example of Hearst and Pulitzer media corruption. They stirred this thing up, splendid little war. The Spanish-American War ended, and the United States acquired the Philippines, Puerto Rico, and Guam. And there's an interesting connection to San Francisco in California and to the Steve Neri case and HUD corruption and real estate racketeering. Raul Vicente Almason was born in the Philippines, but his family had emigrated from Mexico. His great uncle was Benito Juarez, the first Indian elected, democratically elected president of Mexico, and is a famous movie, Juarez, starring Paul Muni, who was actually Jewish, and a lot of social relevance movies were made by him. I was an escapee from a prisoner on a chain gang. Emile Zola, which was the Dreyfus infamous Captain Dreyfus case, which is has similarities to the Stephen Nery case here in San Francisco, a U.S. Navy sailor who's been in prison through all kinds of corruption for 14 years now. And then, of course, Puerto Rico, which wants independence, and of course, Puerto Rico is famous because a lot of American companies are down there, and there's a lot of controversy about what they're doing. Also, there was an assassination attempt on President Truman when the White House was being renovated. He was living across the street in the Blair House, and some Puerto Rican nationalists tried to assassinate him, and I think they also shot up the U.S. Congress. And I think it was Bill Clinton who pardoned a couple of these people. So that's controversial. And then, of course, we had other presidents who got the Nobel Peace Prize was Teddy Roosevelt, who did try to end the Russo-Japanese War. That's interesting, the connection to San Francisco was with Jack London. Jack London, the great writer, he didn't live as long as I thought he did. I think in his mid-50s, and he also started Valley of the Moon Winery. But I will put up a landmark, which a lot of people just are not aware of. And he was the one, probably the first great American foreign correspondent who documented the Japanese atrocities they inflicted on the Russian POWs. Everybody thought that Russia would beat the Japanese. And one of the reasons Teddy Roosevelt, who was a closet racist, used to refer to the Chinese as those G.D. dirty Chinese and the plucky little Japs, and he couldn't stand to see, this is what several biographers have claimed, to see a white nation being getting their butts kicked by a yellow or, you know, a darker race. And so he came up with this peace conference, which was negotiated at Portsmouth, I think, New Hampshire. And Jack London was a correspondent over there, and he—it's in the movie about him. They do document this very accurately, and I'd recommend that movie for people who want to learn about who are the real and who were the real journalists in American history and in the American media field. And there's some more media scandals. We'll get to those a little further on in this program. 1915, this is interesting, with all the emphasis on the car industry, Model T, there were the 10 million copy or production model came out of the Model T Ford. And, of course, for media, 1927, those of you who like the Grand Ole Opry, they did their first broadcast in Nashville, Tennessee. Excuse me. And, of course, getting back to money, in 1985, Congress passed a bill to balance the budget. I don't know what's happened in the last 24 years, and neither has anybody else. And then, of course, let's see, who else? We had Damon Runyon, who died in 1946. He was a great journalist, and he also wrote Guys and Dolls, which starred Frank Sinatra. It was a great song and dance film. Excuse me. Still have a slight cold. Then we had in media again, 1981, a case which I'm familiar with. So it was a KLW here in San Francisco. We had the first known case of AIDS in the media. A guy named Natkin, who used to shut down the station at midnight, and then he'd run to the bathhouses, and he contracted AIDS. They didn't know what it was at the time. It was called... not sclerosis, but he was at the San Francisco General, and he died, and then they later discovered, I guess they kept the slides, that he had what they call AIDS. So, and then there were other people in the media who had it, but they've kept quiet about it. And, of course, there are people whose lifestyle promote gay, lesbian activity at the Folsom Street orgy. It's a wonder that some of these people haven't come down with it, or if they have, they're keeping it real quiet. Let's see, what else has happened in 1958? This is appropriate for the people who are traveling in the air. We had the first commercial jet flight. Of course, all these people who are stranded at airports are probably thinking, well, this is the 51st anniversary of that. Excuse me. And then for all the deadheads, the Grateful Dead people, 1965, here in San Francisco again, and we had a lot of history in this town, is involved in a lot of history. We had the Grateful Dead did their first concert at the old Fillmore. And then this is a controversial award, but I guess the guy deserved it. Desmond Tutu in 1984 was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. He did do a lot of work to get rid of apartheid in South Africa, but he has tarnished his reputation by embracing the gay lesbian agenda and part of the schism in the worldwide, what they call Anglican community. And the rest of the conservative and Orthodox religions are standing on the sidelines and rooting quietly for injuries. This has damaged the Episcopal, that's what they're called here in the States, church, and this whole business of violating their own religious tenets. They're very close to the Catholics, even if you look at their ceremonies. But increasingly, the traditional Catholics don't want anything to do with these new Anglicans and this whole gay, lesbian, NAMBLA agenda. Here's a media, here's a real journalist who died mysteriously, Gary Webb. He worked for the San Jose Mercury, and he did an investigative series, very controversial, where he exposed the BCCI connection and rogue CIA, that's what he said anyway, agents or operatives' involvement in the Los Angeles drug trade. And there are people who think he was offed. There are other people who said, well, he's not the first journalist to die mysteriously. There was a famous case in Arizona where journalists, real journalists, not these propagandists, which were seen at the New York Times, and we'll get to that in a sec, he had his car blown up. He was exposing political corruption in Arizona. And at the New York Times, they still haven't learned the lessons. We've got another news writer, a guy named Andy Revkin, R-E-V-K-N, who has been who's accused of manipulating the news about that TWA jet that went out of the sky over New York Harbor. And now he's poo-pooing the people who are questioning ClimateGate. It seems that he may be in the pocket of the people who want to profit or are profiting from this, and it's not the first time that media people have been bought and paid. And, of course, as Tammany Hall said, a saying, an honest politician is one who is once bought, stays bought. But the New York Times has, they just got over, or maybe they haven't, gotten over the Jason Blair scandal, where this guy wrote stories about the people he never interviews, a young black, and now he was interviewed on Book TV. He's got a book out, and he's doing psychotherapy or something, and people are questioning his credibility, to say the least, and certainly credentials. And then, going back to through history, the notorious case of Walter Duranty, D-U-R-A-N-T-Y, a hobbled-legged correspondent whom the New York Times, during the 30s, sent to Moscow. And Stalin co-opted him. He provided him with a car, a chauffeur, and a houseboy. And we don't know the relationship of that because the KGB has not only used women to seduce people and to photograph them and compromise them, they've also used young males and that sort of thing. So anything goes with those people, and did and probably still does. Excuse me. And let's see, what else do we have? Oh, some other deaths. 1990, this is Russian-related, Dr. Armin Hammer, who made his initial money by being an abortionist, which is relevant today to the abortion argument in the Harry Reid, Barbara Boxer, Pelosi proposed health care bill. Hammer got out of the abortion business, and he went to Russia when Lenin was still running things before the assassination attempt on him, and they needed money. So he made a deal to get the Russian monarchy's Fabergé eggs, I think that's what it was, the jewels, and he provided money and financing for Lenin, for the Soviets, to keep the country going. Otherwise, it would have collapsed like Churchill wanted it. And Hammer later parlayed that money into starting Occidental Petroleum, which was a so-called blue-chip investment. He died in 1990. Excuse me. Let's see, who else we had? Oh, in 1979, a Catholic evangelist, the very articulate. He wasn't a bombastic. Bishop Fulton Sheen used to be on TV. he could be called the first Catholic TV evangelist. He died in 1979. Excuse me. And then, of course, in 1830, the founder of the guy who kicked the Spanish out of South America, but not Puerto Rico, Simon Bolivar, died. And, Bolivia is named after him today. And we have his name is revered throughout South America, as it should be. What else we have? There's been a request to replay Trevor Howard Hodges' interview I did, excerpt, because it's a long interview. So I'll play a clip from that. This is a repeat and a request, so I'll do that. And if you want to call in, it's 1-347-633-9620. Also, go to our YouTube page. We're putting a lot of emphasis on our videos, since that's one of my interests in school. Amicus Veritas, AmiCusVeritas. Our last two items, videos we put up there, were questions about are smart meters really smart. And, of course, the 15-year-old San Franciscan who lied to get into the U.S. Navy, and he was a survivor on the USS Arizona. He later, and his brother later owned a place called Red's Java House on San Francisco's waterfront. And ironically, whenever we had Fleet Week, the carrier would dock there, because it's one of the biggest docking sites. And a lot of the sailors and Marines would go have one of the best and least expensive hamburgers or ham sandwiches and beers in this town. They since sold the place, and I haven't been able to get hold of Red. I was never able to get on-mic interview with him, but the reason I found out about it was when I used to go there, he had a picture of the Arizona on the wall, and I used to look at it, and, look at those photos. And then one day I came in there, it was gone, so I asked him. He said, somebody stole it. And I said, well, how did it get there in the first place? He said, well, I lied to get into the Navy, and they posted me on the USS Arizona. I was at Pearl Harbor and survived. And very few people know this about the man. I think he's still living. If I can track him down, I'll try to get him on air. But this is one of the remarkable things. Also, we have a street in the same area, Colin P. Kelly. Kelly was a graduate of the West Point Military Academy, and he joined the Army Air Corps. That was before the Air Corps became the USS Air Force, which was started by Harry Truman after World War II. Anyway, he was posted to the Philippines, and on December 10th, he was flying a B-17 and bomb Japanese Navy ships that were shelling American military facilities in the Philippines. And he was attacked. He supposedly sank a Japanese battleship, but it turned out he had sank a cruiser, Harunu. And as he was flying back to Clark Field, he was attacked by a squadron of Zeros, Japanese planes, very well constructed. And the plane was severely damaged. He managed to get all of his crew out, and he crash-landed and died. He was the first American hero. So what happened, all around the country, schools and streets were named after him. President Roosevelt issued a proclamation that his son gave him an appointment. The kid was about 2 or 3 years old, an appointment to West Point, which the son, Colin P. Kelly Jr., went into West Point, served, and then I think he served in Vietnam, and then later became Episcopalian priest. So I don't know if he's still living, but that's a saga. And people drive by that street and they don't know that part of the history of people whom some of these monuments are named after and streets and that. And I'll bring up, I did it on my blog page, interesting site in San Francisco where the Japanese were ordered, when General DeWitt and President Roosevelt ordered the evacuation of the Japanese from the West Coast, the Japanese in San Francisco were ordered to this site. It's very interesting what it is today, so we'll be putting that up on YouTube. I have the videos already, and of course it's Japanese revenge, I guess you could call it. But then we'll be getting into one of the three major kangaroo court cases that occurred here in San Francisco, and that is of Tokyo Rose. Her real name was Aquino. She married a Filipino, and she was Rose de Aquino. Japanese maiden name was Toguri, when she went to Japan just before World War, before Pearl Harbor. And that was the tradition of second-generation Japanese. The families would send them to Japan to learn the culture. And she reluctantly went, and she got caught over there, as other people did during the war. And they told her and other Japanese-American girls, young women, and other foreign nationals, that you broadcast or else you go, you'll be executed or you'll be put into slave labor. So she, you know, here's this 20-year-old girl, graduate of UCLA. She didn't know what to do. And she, there were 20 girls at the radio station, and all she did was play these jazz records and make these catty comments, but she didn't give any military secrets. She didn't encourage anybody to desert or commit treason against the country. And when the Americans landed in Tokyo after the signing of the peace treaty on the surrender on the USS Missouri, everybody was looking for, quote, Tokyo Rose, thinking it was one woman. Well, it wasn't. It was just the name given to the group. Anyway, she happened to be at the radio station, and she got fingered. And so they questioned her in the Justice Department and realized they had a weak case. That was until this corrupt journalist, propagandist is the real name, or Walter Winchell. There's other controversies about this guy dealing with Al Capone and Elliot Ness. He and the Hearst papers beat the drums to have the Justice Department prosecute her for high treason. So reluctantly, the war fever hadn't subsided, and there was still a lot of animosity towards Japanese who had Japanese period. And in fact, this is not talked about much, but Japanese who came back to where to try to retrieve what was seized or what they had to leave behind, they had to masquerade as Filipinos, because the Filipinos had been, everybody would support them because they'd been abused by the Japanese. And this is one of the things that happens in American history. I had done some brief volunteer work for the Japanese American Citizens League, and that's why I became acquainted with Rose D. Aquino Toguri. She, after she was tried here in San Francisco in what was seen as a kangaroo court case in the federal courthouse, I knew the lawyer, he's dead now, who defended her, Wayne Collins Sr., and I was with the Civil Liberties Group, and we supported President Ford giving her a pardon. I later met her when I was in Chicago at her store, and she just accepted her fate. She recently died. It's just one of the great tragedies. She lost her child. She was married in a Catholic church, and her husband, Aquino, could never come and join her in the States. It was just outrageous what they did to him and that whole episode. But Walter Winchell was a real slime bag. And, of course, we're seeing this more and more in these among these media people, and they're not real journalists. They're not propagandists. They lie, distort, and omit. And the other notorious thing that I know about that he did, because I worked in the federal courthouse, and I knew some of the people who were around at the time of Al Capone's prosecution in the federal courthouse in Chicago. And what happened was, it wasn't Elliot Ness that brought Al Capone down. It was a little accountant from the U.S. Treasury Department. In fact, it was a real journalist, Colonel Robert McCormick, the publisher of the Chicago Tribune, which was then Republican and conservative. It's since gone in the other direction. Colonel McCormick had was called the Colonel because he had served in the Army in World War One. If you ever get to Illinois, go out to his military museum estate called Kachinyi. It was the famous battle he was at. And it's a lot of relics there, a lot of history. It's a fascinating sight to see. I will try to put up something on our web pages and YouTube on that. But anyway, he petitioned President Hoover to send in a flying squad, a special squad of IRS investigators to bring down and take down Al Capone, because people are getting tired of the murders, the extortion, the corrupt cops and politicians. And, of course, they didn't know about the corrupt media people like Jake Lingle, who was on Al Capone's payroll. Anyway, they brought in Ira Ery, I-R-E-Y, very good accountant, and they got Al Capone's books. And so that's what he was charged with, income tax evasion on all of his bootleg liquor that he brought in from Canada. So that's the man, the little guy who brought Al Capone down because of his ability, because he got the books. It wasn't Elliot Ness. That's all myth. In fact, Elliot Ness was controversial in his own. He didn't do well in Chicago. Then he went to Cleveland, got into controversy there, and he died. He died relatively young, I think. But I do remember growing up in the late 50s and 60s seeing The Untouchables in black and white on TV. And, of course, they've made a couple of movies out of it. And it gets more mythologized every time they make a movie. And the last one was with Sean Connery, who plays a real rough, tough cop, and that famous line, if they use a bat, you use a gun, and, you know, that sort of thing. If they use a knife, you use a bat. They use a gun. The escalation, the ratchet effect, they come back at them stronger. But it's been mythologized. And Walter Winchell, he was a real slime bag, and people should learn about these phonies, just like this guy, Andy Repkin. He ought to be fired. But, of course, you know, that's why people do not trust the media, because there's more lying, distortions, omissions, and then they're up in your face and try to come down on your head when you try to get them to correct or to clarify, and for them to obstruct things and to ignore all the corruption and the abuse and the growing pedophilia. Incidentally, the Albany, California School District, which their school board had passed a resolution permitting the schools to teach gay lifestyle in the school district over there, they reversed themselves. And, of course, the people responsible should be fired, voted out of office, or prosecuted as pedophiles, closet pedophiles. But there's a growing public revulsion to this crotch politics agenda. People are beginning to realize that these agendas have consequences as well as costs. And we cannot afford this. What people do, what consenting adults do in the privacy of their homes or their apartments, should be kept private. And that's what the gay propagandists have urged for years, that let us live our lifestyle in the privacy of our homes. Now they want to do it in the street and not only scare the horses and get the dogs barking, but in the sight of children. And that's what goes on in the taxpayer-funded Folsom Street orgy, which happens here in San Francisco. And finally, people are getting tired of that because children are brought to that scene, and it's indescribable what goes on there. Every type of vice except golden showers and necrophilia goes on, and I wouldn't put it past them on that. And anybody that comes to San Francisco and stays in a hotel or motel, there's a thing known as the hotel tax, and part of that tax goes to fund these orgies. And the politicians, elected officials, are afraid to defund it because of this mythical fear of this mighty gay, lesbian, NAMBLA, transgendered voter bloc, which is a myth. Because even the conservative gays, people who are, you know they're gay, they live their lifestyle, they go to work every day, that sort of thing, and they don't play the crotch politics game, they are realizing that their credibility as a group, or as being identified with that group, is being damaged. So we've canceled the Saturday programs. It's been a lot of strain on me. I've been recovering from some illnesses, injuries from resulting from the accident. Anyway, we will continue. We'll be back on Tuesday, same time, and then go to our website, amicusveritas.org, amicusveritas.org. And invite you to our YouTube sites, YouTube, Amicus Veritas, AmiCusVeritas. So thank you for listening, and this program is archived. We don't take them down. This is Peter Paul Brazola working with the New Shadow, and there's more to come, so thank you for bearing with me. Be careful this holiday season. Watch your money, and watch if you sign for any credit card receipts. Make sure that the clerks don't stick an extra 20 in cash on there, because that's the new scam going on. And I'll tell you on Tuesday about some of the other new scams that are going on in the grocery stores with these automatic checkouts. I just found out today from Safeway what they're doing. and they're catching some of the people, but not all of them. But we all pay for these little scams and rackets. So ignorance is not bliss. This is Peter Paul Rizzola. Thank you for listening. Okay.